You're listening to the Forest School Podcast, delicious waffle chat about education, nature connection, child development, community building, and lots more. Hosted by Lewis Ames and Wem Subberden. We are here with Jesse Zhao. Is that close enough? Did I get
you got
it?
You got it perfectly.
Yes.
Points. Where are you, Jesse? Are you in Canada, right?
Yes, I am in Canada. I'm in Nova Scotia.
Where is Nova Scotia? If I don't know Canadian geography very well. Where?
Nova Scotia, we're on the coast that's closest to you guys.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, if you draw a line from like Cornwall, the bottom of England, all the way horizontally to the left. I mean, west. Then you hit Nova Scotia, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing.
And, in Halifax. I think there's a Halifax in the UK too.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cool. This is very exciting. Jesse, you're here to talk to us because you put something on. I don't know which Facebook group you put it in now, but... I'm going to read the title of it now. It's In the Heart of the Forest, How Reggio Emilia and Forest School Philosophies Blend for the Perfect Early Childhood Education Experience. It's quite a title. It's a hefty one. And we asked if you would come on, and you very kindly said you were coming to talk to us about how Reggio stuff mixes with Forest School stuff. But for a bit of background, can you tell us a bit about like your general work and your educational journey and things like that?
Yeah, of course. So my educational background is in child development, psychology. And I've also been in child education or early childhood education for a long time. My kind of education background or work background is very international. I've been in China for a long time. I've been in Canada for a long time, kind of bouncing back and forth. So I was exposed to a lot of different kind of, I guess, early childhood pedagogy. And some that's like even like the Chinese style, which is not really discussed a lot. Mm-hmm. So my training in early childhood education is mainly on the Reggio approach, not specifically on the Reggio approach, but it is influenced mostly by the Reggio approach, which is what the Canadian kind of the Canadian curriculum is kind of guided by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said the Chinese approach to early years education isn't really discussed that much. Can you give us a little bit of background about that and how it contrasts to mm-hmm. what you've experienced in Canada?
Mm-hmm. The Chinese approach, there's a lot more rigid structure. It's a lot more focused on setting children up for, you know, kind of being part of the big group, following orders, being academically prepared. But at the same time, there's a lot more influence coming in from the West as well. So it's becoming more relaxed. It's becoming more letting the children lead, but there is still a very strong influence of like, everybody has to follow structure and order in it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's very different to Reggio stuff.
For sure. And even in my process of learning, I actually did my master's degree in developmental psychology in China. It was quite a culture shock from what I was learning, which is versus what I was seeing there.
Wow. How interesting. And then was that focused on young children as well in your mm-hmm. master's there, or was it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Specifically kind of on toddlerhood.
Wow. Ooh. How fascinating.
Okay. So if someone has never come, so people might be listening to this with only a forest school background, could you give us a whistle stop tour of Reggio bits and pieces? And I don't know much, so if you forget anything, we won't know. It's fine.
Or like, I hope none of the listeners are like too familiar with it.
is it an approach that, so forest school is one of those things where like there's principles broadly mm-hmm. that the FSA holds, and then there's then interpretation as it meets, like rubber meets the road kind of thing. You know, each school kind of goes, we're going to do this bit and we're going to do this bit. And mm-hmm. is Reggio stuff the same, or is it like everyone's doing the same thing?
Yeah, Reggio is definitely kind of more along the lines of that. There's kind of these guiding principles that guide the Reggio approach, but it's not a strict structure like, you know, maybe the Montessori approach, where it's very much like mm-hmm. these are the things you do and these are the mm-hmm. things you have to follow.
Hi, listeners. Before we continue with the rest of today's episode, I wanted to take a moment to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Skillshare. Skillshare is the ultimate platform for learning new skills and honing your craft with thousands of online classes taught by experts in their various fields. Guess what? As a token of appreciation to our amazing listeners, Skillshare is offering an exclusive deal. Simply click on the link in the podcast show notes and you'll get a fantastic 30% discount on your Skillshare membership. That's right, 30%. So whether you're interested in photography, creative writing, or mastering new software, Skillshare has got you covered. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to enhance your skills and unleash your creativity. Thank you, Skillshare, for supporting our show and helping us provide valuable waffle chats to our listeners. Now let's get back to the rest of today's episode.
Regal is more of like, these are our core principles, and then these are the things of how we view everything and all the people within the early childhood experience, and everything is kind of guided by that principle.
Mm. Yeah, and can you talk us through some of the kind of main sort of ethos points of Regalia?
So there's kind of six main principles. And the most important one, I would say, is the image of the child. So how do we view the child? And the next one is the 100 languages of child, which is how they express themselves, how we understand them. Mm-hmm. And then there is the role of the teacher. So what is kind of, I think it's similar to Forest School, where it's like the teacher is more of a facilitator to try to understand and kind of guide children through the whole process. And then the next part is the environment as the third teacher. So the importance of the environment that plays on early childhood education. And then there's the part about reciprocal relationships between everybody within it, and also a pedagogy of listening.
Mm.
Yeah.
They're so close, aren't they, to the the Forest School principles?
For sure.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Oh, it was just, I kind of got introduced to the Forest School approach more recently. It's kind of new to me. I've heard a lot about it before, mm-hmm. but it's something that's more recently that I started looking more into. And it was really through that search process and learning process that I realized so much of it aligns so well. Even though the regional approach, it's pretty much based on an indoor environment. Yeah. The Forest School is based on an outdoor environment, but I do find that they're very similar.
Mm, yeah, that really sticks out to me, that environment as the third teacher, because that is a thing that when I have read a little bit about Reggio Emilia, I was like, oh, that is so relevant to Forest School. And the kind of, from the Forest School approach and the outdoor approach, then it's about that environment being ever-changing, being really stimulating and full of tiny things that change that you can notice all the time and that children are very aware of, and you know, children are really close to the ground and they're able to see new things growing or things like that, and obviously lots of loose parts that are adaptable and can be transformed and moved around by children. What is a typical kind of Reggio Emilia indoor environment like? Why are they saying the environment is the third teacher? What's important in the environment for Reggio?
For the Regio approach, I guess there is kind of a difference there, because the Regio approach, the teacher kind of prepares the indoor environment to give opportunities for children to explore. So it is about thinking about what could the children be interested in. We prepare it, give them opportunities to explore it, to think about what they're learning about, to think about their environment. Whereas I guess the Forest School approach, it is very much, we go with the flow and see what's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the notes that I made when I was looking up Reggio stuff. Was I was like, oh, there's something about like the, as I was digesting it, I was like, okay, so the environment is the third teacher, but it seems like from what I was reading, you could also say that the environment is an extension of the teachers, whereas and Forest School happens in like various degrees of natural environments, you know, like a school playground to like an urban setting to a, you know, massive 300 acre country estate. But in any sort of natural element, we've given up some elements of control over that environment. There's an element of chaos of like, I was not expecting this to be here today, or like I can't promise that this will be available. You know, like some stuff you go, oh, okay. Like we tried to do tree tapping the other day and it just didn't work. The trees just were not ready to do it that day. So there's like a, It's almost like Venn diagrams, you know, like the environment is a teacher, but Reggio, it's like an, would that be fair to say? It's like an extension of the teacher versus.
I actually really like what you said there. That is very much like that. It is an extension of what the teacher kind of sees and can prepare for the children. I mean, there is still an aspect of kind of, I wouldn't call it chaos, but maybe an aspect of spontaneity in it.
This episode of the Forest School podcast is brought to you in part by the lovely people at Carbon Farmers who have sent us one of their Tawi stoves. This thing is amazing. If you haven't already seen it, you might have seen them at the Forest School conference last year, but this thing is like a big old rocket stove, but slightly modified design. It gives you multiple spots to cook on. It is incredible. So tiny, tiny, tiny fire. We've been using like a tiny amount of wood, and rather than it all going off and that heat going in different directions, it channels it into exactly where you want it to go to the different cooking spots. We have got one. We've managed to boil a kettle on the chimney. We've managed to reduce down some jam on the top plate, and at the same time there's a bit we can slide underneath for some grilling. So we managed to grill up some toast, reduce down some jam, and also boil a kettle at the same time off one small fire. So efficient. And I can honestly say I wish we'd had this when we were working in schools. This thing sits on a huge butt of water, so as the fire moves through and you put in new wood, it pushes the sticks very slightly down the back. They drop down into the bucket of water underneath, turning them into biochar. It is fantastic. I know so many times when I was working in schools, I would have had things where trying to get that fire pit to cool down in time so that I could get home, or you don't run that risk of dumping water on it and all the metal warps. This thing is so good because as it goes through, there's no risk of hot embers and different things like that. It is so safe and so simple, and I can honestly recommend world and have a look at their multiple different types of Tawi stove, and that would be incredible. I promise you it will make your forest school and outdoor sessions even better. Thank you again to the Tawi stove people for sending us one of those stoves.
Yeah.
Because you can prepare the environment as much as you want, but there is still some aspect that you're like, oh, I didn't see that, but the child saw that.
Yeah.
Mm. I think even for the forest school approach too, when you go out to an area, the tools that you prepare for the children,
yeah,
that creates some type of extension to what you may be teaching, what the environment might react to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Can you give us an example of like something that yourself as a, or somebody else as a as an early years educator might, in something they might prepare in the classroom that might be particularly Reggio as opposed to maybe a less Reggio inspired early childhood setting? Do you know what I mean? Like if you were kind of preparing, often they call it like a provocation or an invitation,
yeah,
or that kind of thing. You know, what would an invitation or provocation in a Reggio-inspired environment look like compared to maybe in the environment that you described previously, which is much more academic-focused?
Mm-hmm. I guess the first thing that comes to my mind is kind of a comparison between more of a Montessori style versus a Reggio style. Because Montessori style, I don't remember what do they call it, the specific type of toys and tools, like the work that they do, they're usually very close-ended. There is an end goal to what they're doing. So it is prepared. They're not taught what to do, but there is a correct way versus an incorrect way of doing it. And whereas the Reggio approach, you provide these provocations for the children and they are there to decide what to do with them. And even if the indoors we set up, let's say this is the blocks area, this is the home area, the children are not restricted to only keep these toys in those areas. They can decide what to do with them.
Gotcha. So stuff can move around and people can go, this, I see play potential for this, but I need to mix it with some stuff that's over there.
Exactly. And I think that also ties into the pedagogy of listening, which is the educator kind of really responding to what they see, what the children are trying to express and what they are kind of experiencing in that process.
Which ties completely into forest school, doesn't it? That cycle of kind of observation and reflection and planning and going, oh, I've noticed them behaving that way or communicating in that way or interacting with that thing in that way. So therefore, I'm going to plan a little bit of something like that for next session or something to further that. That's very close there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you were saying sort of like it's not for, it's for the children to decide what they do with the stuff. And I was reading a little bit, and would it be fair to say that even in kind of more kind of creative activities that children might engage in with the Reggio approach, that it would be process over product?
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Definitely about the process. And that is a lot on the Reggio approach, where the documentation plays in part two, where the documentation is not about what the children made at the end or in the end with what they created in, let's say, their painting or their sculpture or whatever. It's the process of where they went from the beginning and then what they, what happened through that whole process that led to the end.
I do feel like here in the UK, there's definitely early, an approach to early childhood education, which is very Reggio inspired and lots of free play and lots of things like that. But there is still a tendency, I think, in a lot of settings, whether it be like toddler groups or schools or nurseries or kindergartens, where maybe that process over product stuff isn't happening quite so much. Like, I don't necessarily think we're all there yet, and we all have an understanding of that idea, that it might be that we're doing this craft, or we're making this card for Mother's Day, and everyone's is the same. Yeah. It starts with a worksheet. It starts with, you know, here is the cotton wool, and you stick the craptivities. Yeah. This is what we call them. You know, everyone ends up with the same thing. With just the only way you can tell them apart is because the teacher has written their name at the bottom or the back. You know.
Yeah, and absolutely, in Canada, it's still very much like that as well. And I do think the history of early childhood education is kind of very, very new here in Canada still. I think for a very long time, early childhood was still just seen as care. I think the education part is very new in Canada. But, you know, we're just all learning, and we're slowly adapting all these things in it as well.
Can I ask, Jesse, so one of the things, again, because one of these things, because it's something where there's indifferent interpretations, I've been doing some reading, and I feel like I need to check with everything and go, is that one person that I read, or is this an actual thing? So one thing I saw was someone saying that everything in the Reggio environment is there with the goal of education and learning, and that was their kind of, well, I don't know whether that was this personal person's ethos or whether that's a Freud thing, but I was thinking about, there's obviously, that's kind of an interesting thing to think that everything in a curated environment is for the purpose of education, because I would say a lot of stuff that comes up at Forest School, more and more the way we try and do it, and, you know, people who are away from that, like, state education thing, you might have things that are just there for, like, regulating your emotional state, or things that you put in the environment for just because they're fun, but they're not pushing anything on, they are just fun, or they are just interesting, you know. So is that something that's across all Reggio settings, that everything in the environment is for the purpose of pushing education forwards? Or does it also have that element of regulating and social, emotional, and, you know, all these other pieces?
You know, I actually have never heard that before. But the part where you meant, you said about interpretation of it, I think plays a big part of it. Because just the term education, we can interpret it very differently. So is this part of just like regulating, or like, you know, just even just relaxing, is that part of education as well, or is it not? Right? Yeah. It is a part of children learning to become, or I mean, just to manage everything, manage their emotions, manage how they interact with people. Even just the process of, let's say, this is just something interesting. Well, what is interesting about it? That invites a lot of exploration of, like, what's behind it, where does it go, what can it do as well.
Yeah.
So yes, I've never specifically heard about that, but I do kind of agree to it, that everything in the environment is for education, but it depends on how you interpret education.
Yeah,
education,
I completely,
but not academia, maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that's one of the things where, again, in the UK, we've got some way to go in terms of people kind of trying to understand what Forest School is, who maybe don't come from that background, whether it be a teacher or a parent or whoever, kind of trying to understand, okay, so do they do learning? Like, do they do, like, and what they mean is, do they do reading, writing, maths?
Right.
And our answer to that is like, well, sometimes if it comes up, you know, like, I told a story the other day, and it was about counting grains of rice on a chessboard. I think it was a story from India, and every time a grain of rice was put on the square of the chessboard, the next board had to have double the previous squares grains of rice, and by the end it's like however many thousand grains of rice that wouldn't fit anywhere near the board, and it needs trucks to move the rice or whatever. And the kids were like, oh, was that, is that true? And so Lewis, you helped them make this massive grid on the blackboard, didn't you? And
It was
you
really
did
exciting
the
and
and
really boring.
oh, it
Like,
was great. They were like, look,
it
we kept going and multiplying it and testing it out. So
Yeah.
things like that happen, but only because it happens, not because we've planned. We're gonna,
Right.
this is, I had no idea when I told that story that any question might come up about numbers or maths, but I still think that view of learning in inverted commas, like, is still quite narrow, because that's most of our maybe understanding. That's the stuff that we've been told through our own education for the most part. That's the thing, and again, the same with outcomes, what did you do and how did that go, and rather than how did you feel while you were doing it, or that so trying to explain to people that yes, bouncing on a big net that's like a trampoline is part of education,
Right.
because it is part of self-regulation and about learning about your own body and your own boundaries and all these things that are happening.
Or even understanding about like science, physics, tension, and all that part too. And that's the best part about it is that it comes from children's interests. They want to know about it. It's not you're telling them you have to learn this, where they're just sitting there like, okay, fine, I have to remember this. They're like, no, I want to understand this.
Yeah, by experiencing it. And that's the amazing thing about kids, isn't it, as well, that they have been alive for such a shorter time than we have, that experiences are still so new to them. So bouncing up and down, like, they've only done that a handful of times compared to what. So it's like, this is still really exciting, which is what's so joyful about working with kids, especially younger kids, isn't it, that they genuinely are absolutely beside themselves with excitement when they see a tadpole, because they've only, it's the first time they've ever seen that in their lives. Ah!
There's also something, isn't there, which is like, I think Forest School and Reggio both hold, if we're saying about this thing of like, it's not, education is not necessarily academia, sometimes it's about learning about yourself, but there's also, I think both pedagogies hold this value of, I think if it was a long time ago, people would have used like the term home economics or like home craft and those skills of like, I don't know what the correct or the what the actual word I'm looking for is, because it's quite a
It's quite a
dated,
dated
dated
term.
term here to say like home economics or home craft. But I mean the cooking, the looking after a space, the care of children younger than yourself, all of those things that like for us might come up in mud kitchens or through cooking over the campfire and in an indoor environment. I'm guessing there's like role play areas and mock houses and things like that. Would that be right?
And that part, I think, is why I think it's so important to kind of learn from every approach and every philosophy, because kind of these like what you describe, kind of more like these home economics learning. It's not There's not a lot in Reggio. In Reggio is more in terms of kind of home play or like pretend play, where the children are using their play process to experience what they see their parents doing, what they see other adults doing. But there's no actual there's no strong emphasis on actual practice of these skills.
It's not skill acquisition. It's play for the sake of play or play for the sake
Exactly.
of experience.
Just changing the topic slightly. So, just you linked to an article that you've written, where you've which we've had a look at, and we'll put the link in the show notes as well, where you've summarized the two approaches of Reggio and Forest School, and then you've very helpfully given some kind of tips and pointers for people who might want to implement these two teaching philosophies into their own work. And one of the things you have suggested is about collaborative partnerships, and through the, between children, educators, families, and the wider communities. And I'm always interested in this, because when I was teaching, I have to confess, I very rarely, it rarely entered my mind. I was in secondary education, so with older children, very rarely entered my mind that I could reach out to the wider community. I kind of felt like, oh, I'd love to do that one day, but I just need to get on with what I'm doing. And then I was working once with a teacher next door to me, and we were teaching the same year group, and we're teaching them the same book, we're teaching English. And she just went, I'm just going to invite all the parents in the afternoon after school to have like a cup of tea, and for the kids to talk to them about this book we're reading, and for them to look at these like amazing art things they'd made inspired by the book. And I was like, how did I just not think of that? Like, that's so simple and so easy. Now we're lucky enough to be able to do things like that in Forest Point, like invite families in, invite parents in. But I wondered about whether you had any other kind of stories about sort of ways that either yourself or you've heard about kind of opening education up to either families or the community. Have you got any stories about that?
I can't think of any stories right now, but like on that point, you know, I do think that a lot of times as educators, especially when you're in an indoor education environment, it's so easy to forget that the children are part of the whole society. We think that, okay, they're just in my classroom. These are my goals I got to complete. And then whatever they do outside has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And that, but that part is also another part of the Regio core principle, which we talk about children are social. They have reciprocal relationships with everybody, with the society around them. So it's so important to remember that, you know, it's not just about the teacher in the classroom, what you can teach them. It's so much about, you know, also talking to their parents, inviting them in, inviting other people in the community and maybe other educators, maybe people who are doing different approaches to education, to all come together. And yeah, and just that will create such a better learning environment for them.
That's massive, isn't it? And I think that's something that, again, both these kind of pedagogies, I think, give you space as a, you can be the lead educator or the lead, you know, facilitator in a space without being the only facilitator in the space. I think there's something with a lot of, I definitely felt when I was, so I worked in primary education. And so I had one set of kids that were with me 9 o'clock till 3 o'clock all day, every day. I was the English teacher and maths teacher and art teacher and PE teacher and music teacher. And like, in one sense, it's like really fun because you're putting on all these different hats and like exploring all these things. But in the other sense, I was always really aware, again, like they're just getting my views on these things and my expertise on these things. Whereas it sounds like both Forest School and Reggio have got this thing of going, well, you could just reach out to people and go, hey, this person's going to come in and do that. Or because you don't have to be the, at least very much in Forest School, you could be low status and go, you know, with kids, we've done it with, you know, 6 year olds, you can go, you know, way more of these knots than I do. I'm now, teach me these things, you know, come through, let's do this. And that you're saying about it being reciprocal rather than top down, I think is so, such a shared value, but such an important one to have for both pedagogies.
Exactly. And like it even ties back to what we were saying earlier with interpretation. You know, as the facilitator or the educator in the classroom, you might interpret something one way, but the children might interpret it a different way. Somebody else might interpret it a different way as well. So if you don't bring in all these different views, how do you really provide a real education for the kids?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And sort of valuing that like autonomy and that like self-directed learning and all those things that you can get from. So if you were to do criticisms, and that's too big of a word, one of the questions that gets levied about Forest School, less so as, so Forest School is now becoming something that people are doing in primary education, in secondary education, people are doing it with adults, people are using the pedagogy in lots of different age groups, but originally it is an early years pedagogy, just like Reggio is. And because it, like Reggio, has this kind of child-led, you know, we went with what they were interested in, we moved around, we did all these things. One of the questions that get asked is, okay, but when they go to a more formal education, say at five, at six, how are they even ready for it? Or how do you get them? So like, what would Reggio's or your experience, how would you respond to that question?
You know, that's actually a question I've been thinking about for a while. And that's actually kind of what I'm researching right now, where I want my next article to be on, about transition to more formal schooling. It's definitely a challenge in the regional approach as well. In Canada, how we approach it is that the children, once they're 4 years old, they have kind of a pre-primary situation that they can go to now. It's kind of in between formal education and daycare. So they still get that freedom, but there is a little more structure to it. And then the next level, when they go to kindergarten, it is kind of more structured, but still very play-based before they go into formal schooling. But do I think it's the best approach? Not really. I do think that no matter what age, giving children their autonomy to learn is the best. But definitely it is a concern for a lot of people, that like, how do these children adjust to formal schooling later on? Because not everybody has the kind of luxury to be able to have this type of education the whole time. But I think from the regio approach, or even the forest school approach, what really sets the children up really well is the curiosity that they build about learning, is the respect that they have for other people, and then also the teamwork and collaboration with others. So these are all really important, I would guess, they're soft skills, kind of, that can prepare them for formal schooling.
Yeah. You've mentioned the word respect, and it's popped up a question that I had in my head. So if I can cycle back a bit, we were talking about, right at the start, we were talking about the third teacher and environments and things. And bit of background. In the UK right now, we've had one of the wettest winters we've had for years and years and years. Loads and loads of forest school teachers are very worried about their sites because they're waterlogged, because they're just... heavy use is churning them up, and we're having to sort lots of people, I think, are reflecting on their role in protecting their environment. And from what I can read, Reggio seems to have quite a high emphasis on care for the environment and care for is it like practicing putting things away, is it like cleaning things up, what does it look like, what does that respect for the environment look like in a Reggio setting?
In a regional setting, there's no exact way on how to do that. But a lot of it has to do with, yes, cleaning up your space. A lot of it has to do with interacting with more natural materials. You know, in a real regional environment, you're not going to see a lot of man-made plastic toys. There is a lot of what we collect from nature, not something we break off from nature. It's something that's fallen off, we collect from nature, we take it into the classroom, and we see what we can do with them. So there's a lot of loose parts play as well. And I think the respect really comes from that, is that, you know, children are interacting with natural materials and they know where this comes from. And it's not just something that's artificial that's given to them. So they have a relationship with the land that they are on.
As outdoor leaders and educators, we often find ourselves entrusted with sensitive information about our students, their families, and our fellow staff. From emergency contact details to medical information, ensuring the confidentiality of this data is paramount. But in today's digital age, protecting this information extends beyond the physical realm and into the online world. That's where NordVPN comes in. NordVPN is a trusted name in online security, providing a virtual private network that encrypts your internet connection and shields your online activities from prying eyes. With NordVPN, you can browse the web, communicate with parents, and manage administrative tasks with peace of mind, knowing that your data is safe from hackers, snoopers, and other threats. But NordVPN isn't just about security. It also offers flexibility and convenience, allowing you to access geo-blocked content, connect to public Wi-Fi hotspots securely, and bypassing censorship restrictions. Whether you're researching lesson plans, communicating with colleagues, or simply unwinding with some online entertainment, NordVPN ensures that you can do so safely and privately. So, fellow outdoor enthusiasts, if you are ready to take your online security up to the next level, I urge you to sign up to NordVPN today by using the link in the show notes. You'll not only safeguard your sensitive data, but also support the continued exploration and enjoyment of the great outdoors through this podcast. Stay safe, stay secure, and let's keep the spirit of adventure alive, both in the forest and online. Do you think it changes? So I was thinking, like, there's that, again, if it's like Venn diagrams, the overlapping bit is like care of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm asking you more of a personal question than a, like, what would Reggio say about this? I was curious about the difference in those. So lots of our care for the environment, for us at least, comes from a place of like, these things are alive. Like, mm-hmm. the trees are alive, the woods is alive, the soil is alive. So the mm-hmm. the care from the environment doesn't necessarily have much of us in it. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. Whereas from what we were describing earlier, and it being the Reggio Third Teacher being a curated space, I can imagine that maybe there's a bit more of like, I've worked hard to put this together, mm-hmm. or I've done this. Does that? What do you think about those differences?
I can definitely see that from that angle. And this actually brings back something that I had a discussion about recently. It was my experience as a child in China and my experience as a child in Canada. Where I remember when I went to school in China, every child in primary school, I think I was grade one or grade two, had to be involved in cleaning the classroom every single day. Not just the classroom, the hallways, everywhere that we use. So whereas in Canada, we have janitors who take care of the cleaning. We have mm-hmm. kids sticking gum underneath their desks. And unless they're like in trouble, no, they don't have to clean up after themselves. And I think just the part about taking care of the environment versus not taking care of the environment creates a different respect for the space that they're in. Even though it is man-made, it is still learning that you are part of this space and you have to take care of it. And I do think that extends to outside of the man-made environment as well.
That's so interesting. Do you think the same thing happens in Japan? I'm sure I've read a Japanese novel where kids also do that.
And that actually was, I think, a video that came up about Japanese school that reminded me of that. I haven't thought of it for the longest time, actually.
Yeah. And does that work well? Do you think that people having sort of experienced both, as you say, you know, the example of like kids sticking gum under their desks might be one example, but mm-hmm. do you feel that it goes wider than that in terms of your relationship with the environment when you know you're going to be the people kind of cleaning it up? Do you think that does have a really, I can imagine it would. Do you think it has a big impression?
Yeah, for sure. Like that, it's just being responsible for that environment. And I do think that the more responsibility you give people, the more they will feel, what is it? That they will feel part of where they are, I guess.
It's so interesting. Do you know Bob Hughes, who's written about play types? Have you come across him?
It does not.
Okay, he's like a kind of play guru, basically. He was. He wrote a book, and at the end of the book, he poses certain questions about play work, he would call it, rather than education. Or so if you're a play worker, much closer to Reggio and Forest School approach, that it's about child-led play and you're facilitating that. And one of the questions he poses is, how do you balance the idea that play should be intrinsically motivated and freely chosen, and then you've got your play space full of loose parts and stuff, and you'd love the kids to help you to tidy that up. But if we're looking at from a playwork perspective, how many kids are going to be intrinsically motivated or freely choose to tidy up? So what do you do? And there's no right or wrong answer, and everyone's going to have a different approach to that. But it's something that we've really explored, haven't we, Lewis, in terms of you know, yeah. how are we going to do this? Are we going to turn it into a game? Are we going to, mm-hmm. we've had lots of different kind of approaches to it. And I'd say we've probably come down to a place where if we really need some help from the kids to help yeah. tidy up, because say they've got loads of cushions and blankets out and we know it's about to chuck down with rain, or we know that somebody's coming to visit and it looks like an absolute monstrous mess, you know, that, or do you know what I mean? Or if they've taken something special out and we've said, oh, do you know what? Yes, you can play with this in that place, but would you do me a massive favor and bring it back? So yeah. when it really needs, it absolutely needs to be packed away or done in a certain way, then we do ask for that. But in a general way, we would probably do most of it. Would you say that's fair, Lewis?
Yeah, I think I was talking to one of our volunteers today, and because we were having a wider conversation about like motive and like motivation for doing things, mm-hmm. and like you're saying, well, about that intrinsic thing, and I was saying, I guess my long-term hope is that if I model tidying up and talk yeah. about why I'm tidying up, yeah. then at some point empathy will come in. Fingers crossed. Really banking on some empathy coming in, and it does, you know, invariably it does come in to the, but it comes into the degree that people can give it, you know, like the, so, and then they go, I can see that this has value, or I can see that this is a laborious task, and so I will offer my help to do that mm-hmm. thing. I think more it comes from like, there's that part of it, which is like, I fully believe that that's the thing, because then I think, like we were saying about life skills, that empathy and gratitude reason for tidying, I hope will go with the kids for way longer than mm-hmm. like, we have to tidy up because you have to tidy up. And I mm-hmm. actually always hate tidy up. And so you're building this like negative, like association with it. Yeah. And so, but there's also a thing where I'm like, if we're talking about reciprocal relationships, and I'm thinking about how often would I end up having a conversation that ended up being negative or ended up being hierarchical because I was going, you have to tidy. No, mm-hmm. I'm going to make you tidy, you know, and then every one of those is a chip away at an authentic relation, an authentic reciprocal relationship. That was a big waffle.
But then I can see it from the other way, that if it's just part of life and that's just what everybody does everywhere all the time, there are loads of routines that we would do that are just, they're not, it's not, it might be laborious, but you don't think of it as laborious. You don't think like, oh, they're telling me to do, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like walking in or like getting a snack out of your own bag, or do you know what I mean? There's lots of things.
Your food, right?
Say again.
Yeah.
Even cooking your food.
Yeah.
Right? And I think what you mentioned earlier too is that, like, you know, just by modeling it and not making it such a negative interaction when you're not like forcing them to do it, you're not saying like, oh, we all got to clean up now. By not making it a negative process, you kind of build that positive relationship with doing this. And, you know, it definitely is hard because cleaning up, yes, it is a chore. But at the same time, there is motivation to it because next time you want to use this again. Yeah. It's just, we have to kind of teach them that, you know, you will have to delay your gratification, but you will get to play with it again because you did take part in taking care of everything that's here.
Yeah, I struggle with that personally.
Well, and I think this
my gratification is like my.
It's not a strong suit for people.
Just do the fun thing now. Do the fun thing now, and forget about it. It'll cease to exist when you stop the fun thing. Anyway, okay, sorry.
But no, I have a thing where I'm going to drag it back. There's one of the things that I think is a difference in the pedagogies, and it's not necessarily a difference in the pedagogies, but I think, at least in the UK, I'd be interested to hear what your experiences are in different places, Jesse. But here, forest school is like, forest school is someone's baseline 5 days a week education is very rare. There are some settings where there are forest school nurseries, but hazarding a guess, I would say 85 to 90% of forest school that's delivered in the UK is delivered as a like, it's done on a Wednesday afternoon, or it's forest school Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And so the balance that you need to strike. And like, you know, the chores and the tidying up are just one aspect. But to go broader, there's something about you just do something on a Tuesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think here it's way easier for some people to say, well, for the leader to tidy up is part of what we're paying for them mm-hmm. to do. But when you scale that up to 5 days a week, you know, if you like a full-time educational approach, which lots of nurseries and indoor settings here would be more regular based, mm-hmm. you have to have different considerations and go, right, is that manageable over 5 days, over right. 6 days, with no breaks in the holidays, with different staff, with, right. you know, all of those things? How does that compare to your experiences?
I mean, you know, in Canada, for school is really relatively new. I'm mm-hmm. very, very, like, we're a little baby compared to you guys. And definitely most for us, what I would say, maybe 99% are part-time programs for children. A lot of for school practitioners I've talked to say that they actually, the programs are mostly attended by children who are homeschooled. So they don't mm-hmm. actually have a formal schooling. So it is more of an enrichment experience for them as well. But, you know, I guess I get what you're saying, where it's just like when it's only once a week, you know, that whole process is so different, because then you got to delay for a whole week to even say, like, oh, what's the point of this?
Yeah, exactly. That thing yeah. of it's not ready to use again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and I don't too have to long.
Think for a whole week.
Yeah.
20 minutes for some small children. You know, you right. take a 2-year-old and it's right. not, they're not holding it. Therefore,
yeah.
doesn't exist anymore.
It's yeah, not. Exactly.
How I work. So can you tell us a bit about your forest school stuff? So you've set up a forest school, is this right? Mm-hmm. Time for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and I was just thinking about that. I totally forgot to mention that.
Yeah,
earlier.
Yeah.
we just set this up not long ago. It's kind of when we moved to Nova Scotia, we were in BC before, so the other end of Canada. There's a lot more forest school programs there. There's a lot more options. BC in general is a very outdoorsy kind of environment, so it's very well received by parents. A lot of daycares are kind of forest school based as well. But when we came to Nova Scotia and we came to Halifax, we realized there's so few options, especially for early childhood. And also with my son, he's so high energy. And he's so much better when he's outdoors. He's well-regulated. He interacts better. He's playing. He's exploring. So we just decided, you know what, maybe it's time to jump into this and do something ourselves. Yeah, so we started Tide View Nature School. We're offering part-time forest school programs for kids under 5. And we just started running. Right now, we're only once a week. Hopefully, we'll extend to more days of the week if more people are interested in it.
Cool. And is this for kids to attend without their parents and carers, or do parents and carers come with them?
Mm-hmm. It's without the parents and carers.
Okay.
So it's just us. But we did decide to actually open it up so that if the parents want to attend, they can attend as well,
mm-hmm.
Just to be part of the experience too. Because I do believe that they do need to see what their children are doing to really understand the value in it.
Or what's your kind of site like? Is it sort of full woodland, or is it, what's it like?
We're actually really lucky. We're very close to a park, and I think it's not a provincial park. I think it is a city park, but it's very much natural. There is a pathway that there is a cleared out pathway that you can walk on, but everything else is kind of just wooded. There's some waterways in there as well.
Wow.
So we kind of just use the entire place and just find little nooks and spaces to use. And our last session was actually when we found a little stream, and we got to play in the stream, dig for mud, and that was just awesome.
Aww.
That's a word that I still culturally cannot map. When someone says, oh yeah, I do stuff in a park. A park in the UK is like 5 square meters of AstroTurf with a swing set right. on it yeah. in the middle. But that's not the kind of park that North Americans mean. You mean...
Right.
thousands of acres and like all the wildlife, like, in the world.
Space. Yeah.
Mental.
And it is maintained. There's garbage cans throughout. There's maybe right. outhouses. There's a cleared pathway that you can walk on, but there's, yeah. It's a natural park.
different parks.
Oh, I wish we could do this kind of chat with video. Like, do you know what I mean? Just go, oh, here's our site and here's the stream. Yeah. And
right.
So good. Or if anyone listening, like, you know, makes TV shows and just wants to pay Lewis and I to travel around the world visiting amazing forest school settings all over the world,
that would
also be great. I'd be there in a second to come and visit. Sounds amazing.
Thank you. So, Jesse, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. I think the people listening will have engaged a lot of questions, hopefully answered a lot of questions, but also given people lots to think about. So thank you for that and
for sharing it.
And so tideviewnaturescool.ca is your website. Is there anywhere else you want to direct people to if they want to find out more about your stuff?
Just tideviewnaturescool.ca for now.
That's great. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing the stuff that you've already done with the Forest School World. It's great.
Thank you, guys. Nice chatting.
Yeah, great to meet you.
Okay, cheers, mate.
Bye.
Bye.
And now is the time when we thank the fantastic people that are supporting us on Patreon, on patreon.com/theforestschoolpodcast. So thank you to Karen and Matthew, Catherine, Gareth, Rebecca, Rosie, Julie, Rachel, Candice, Claire, Heidi, Louise, Michael, and Anna. Thank you all so, so much for your support. It really does help support the work that we are doing. And don't forget, if you want to get ad-free episodes and our bonus episodes, you can sign up at patreon.com/theforestschoolpodcast.